Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has supported our nation's heroes and their families ever since. Heroes like Marine Corps Sergeant Adam Mayo. He served our nation for over 7 years before he was severely injured during training. He was left paralyzed from the chest down, severely limiting his ability to move around his home independently. Tunnel to Towers paid Sergeant Mayo's mortgage, removing a financial burden for him and his family. The foundation gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his specific needs. Tunnel to Towers helps severely injured service members and first responders, as well as Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders. It has already come to the aid of so many heroes and their families by providing mortgage-free homes. The foundation is also committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The NYPD has arrested 62-year-old Frank James, the man suspected of a mass shooting in a Brooklyn subway yesterday. While law enforcement is still looking for clues as to why James carried out the attack, Democrats already have their answer. It's the gun's fault. And also, historic inequality is what the mayor of New York said. We'll get into this, friends. It's time for Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. Look, folks, we are in a time of elevated crime. We are in a period here where we know nationally there's a problem. And so this latest shooting in New York City by somebody who was arrested many times and was well known to law enforcement is a reminder of just what exactly is going wrong here. Here is a photo of the suspect, 62-year-old Frank James. And as you see here, he is a black man in his early 60s. And he allegedly carried out this terror attack. It was a terror attack, by the way, according even now to the FBI. The FBI came out and said that today. I saw it yesterday. Because they early on were saying they were not investigating it as a terror attack. That just means they hadn't yet found enough evidence to classify it as such. Now they have, because it was an act of terror. And it's noteworthy that this suspect was known to the FBI. Here's a headline for you. Brooklyn subway attack suspect previously known to the FBI and cleared. That's right. He was already on their radar. And somehow they had interviews, sit downs with him. And decided, oh no, this is fine. There's no problem here. Pretty remarkable, right? Pretty astonishing. Now, this is one incident. It's a horrible one. Thank God nobody was killed. He shot 10 people. He deployed a smoke grenade. He had a gas mask on. He also had a hatchet, apparently, in his bag. No one was killed. He shot people, some critically injured, but he did not manage to have a lethal impact in this terrorist attack, largely because his gun jammed. So he also had a very limited proficiency and understanding of firearms. Thank God. But this could have been much worse. We could have easily had a dozen people or more murdered on the New York City subway during the morning rush hour by somebody who was a career criminal, essentially, arrested about a dozen times, and was known to the FBI as a possible extremist. What kind of extremist, by the way? Oh, you won't see much about this, but he was an abject racist lunatic. All right? This guy, Frank James, hated white people, hated Asian people, made this quite clear in videos he posted to YouTube where he said the most anti-white, anti-Asian things you could possibly imagine. Repeatedly, he was a racist. Some on the right are even calling him a black supremacist because he wanted to attack people of other racial backgrounds. Now, the media is not going to put it into that context. Of course, they're just going to focus on the mental health issues here. And in the case of New York City's Mayor Eric Adams, his whole approach right now seems to be the focus on historical inequality as what caused the crime, and also other failures of society. Watch this.
We are going to get better. This is going to be a safe city. And we've been here before. 1984, when I started my policing career, this was a city that was filled with violence. Our subway systems were unsafe, but we had the right energy and spirit to turn that around, and we're going to do it again. But let's be clear. We're dealing with historical inequalities, historical abandonments and failures. And as I stated, there are many rivers that will continue to feed the sea of violence if we don't dam each river. We have an overproliferation of guns in our city and in our country.
Now let's understand, he's completely wrong. These are absurd analyses to present. First of all, on the historic inequalities here as it pertains to the surge in gun and other violence and just crime in general in New York City. New York City has already went through a period in the 90s into the 2000s of cleaning up the streets, of becoming a very safe large city. And I lived here during it. I know it was a very safe city. It was a remarkable turnaround, essentially a drop in murders of 90% plus since the early 1990s by the time you get to about 2012. So what happened? We all of a sudden got a lot more historically unequal in the last few years? No. Democrat policies about crime from the prosecutor's office, from the state assembly in New York, from the mayor's office, from the governor's office, Democrat ideas in the media about criminal justice reform, all of that came together and pushed away what we had learned about actual crime fighting and made people think, oh, I guess we can just let criminals out and not punish them and not enforce the law and everything will be fine. Of course, this was complete madness. And then the focus on the guns. Well, here you go. Here's Eric Adams again saying we have to stop the flow of guns into our cities, including ghost guns.
All across America, big cities are dealing with this level of violence. And so that's why the president was right to put in place or attempt to appoint a new head of the ATF, a nominee for the ATF. We need to stop the flow of guns, including ghost guns. That's a real crisis that we are facing. If we want to solve this problem, it's about all of us getting on board, not those who are living in an alternate reality of what's taking place in reality on our streets every day.
So initial reports, just to look at how stupid this talking point is that you're hearing from a lot of Democrats right now, initial reports are that this was a legally purchased firearm that he had in the state of Ohio, and then he took it across state lines and was in violation of New York City and New York State law in doing so. That's what we know as of now. How is the city of New York going to stop that? Are they going to search every vehicle that enters New York City? He drove a U-Haul, apparently. Are they going to search every vehicle that enters the city to make sure there's no illegal guns coming into the city? No, they're just going to make it impossible for people to legally own firearms. They're going to harass and annoy lawful gun owners or would-be gun owners and violate their Second Amendment rights and lock people up because they didn't properly register a 20-gauge shotgun that they used to go pheasant hunting on the weekends. That's the kind of bullcrap the New York City authorities, the NYPD and others, are forced to do because of Democrat lunacy on guns. Speaking of Democrat lunacy, Kathy Hochul, whose antics yesterday were just absurd. She showed up and seemed to think that she was leading some kind of a political rally against violence. We need the governor of New York to start giving completely worthless pablum in the aftermath of a terrorist attack on our subway. Watch this.
No more mass shootings. No more disrupting lives. No more creating heartbreak for people just trying to live their lives as normal New Yorkers. It has to end, and it ends now. And we are sick and tired of reading headlines about crime. It has to stop. I'm committing the full resources of our state to fight this surge of crime, this insanity that is seizing our city, because we want to get back to normal.
No more mass shootings, she shouts. Oh, thanks. I'm sure the criminals are going to pay close attention to the shrill idiot governor of New York. It's outrageous, isn't it, that this person is the governor of any state? This woman shouldn't be the governor of a lemonade stand, and yet she runs New York State's executive branch right now. One of the reasons we have so many problems in these blue states is because Democrats keep electing morons. All right, it's beginning to look like Russian President Vladimir Putin's effort to prevent, by the way, she wasn't even elected. She just was who was left after the last Democrat elected governor, you know, got pushed out. Putin, he's trying to prevent NATO expansion in Eastern Europe by invading Ukraine. And guess what? That may have backfired. The nations of Sweden and Finland are now seriously considering joining the defensive alliance, with the decision expected to come within weeks. We'll have more on that with the Heritage Foundation's Niall Gardner coming up. Listen, you know I'm skeptical by nature, so when I heard about home title theft, I figured, can this really happen? Can someone just forge your name off of a quitclaim deed and then act like they own your home and it's all done online? Yeah, they can actually steal your home online. This is real. According to the FBI, this is a fast-growing crime, much faster growing than even credit card fraud. You're not covered by the normal homeowner's insurance you probably have. Home Title Lock earned my trust. They put a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect anyone messing with your home's title, they mobilize to shut it down. Here's what I urge you to do. Number one, go to HometitleLock.com and read the testimonials from FBI agents and government officials. And number two, register your home address to see if you're already a victim and don't even know it. When it comes to protecting your home, tell them Buck Sexton sent you to get my listener discount. HometitleLock.com. Again, that's HometitleLock.com. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line. Russian President Vladimir Putin launched his invasion of Ukraine in part to prevent the expansion of NATO along Russia's border. Well, it seems his plan may have blown up in his face. Today, the prime ministers of Finland and Sweden met to discuss the possibility of both nations joining the alliance, citing Russian aggression as the catalyst for their potential membership. Here's what Finland's Prime Minister Sanna Marin had to say earlier today.
The European security architecture have changed fundamentally after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The change in the security landscape makes it necessary to analyze how we best secure peace for Finland and in our region in the future.
The Prime Minister added that a final decision on whether or not Finland will apply for membership could come within weeks. A spokesman for the Kremlin warned against the two nations joining NATO, saying it would not, quote, bring stability to the European continent. All right, well, let's dive into this. Joining me now is Niall Gardner, director of the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage Foundation. Niall, is this a big backfire for Putin? I mean, what is this looking like?
Well, Buck, thanks very much for having me on the show today. And, you know, without a doubt, I think this is very bad news for Putin and for the Russian regime. I think certainly Putin's invasion of Ukraine, which has gone incredibly badly, is really backfiring on multiple fronts, including, of course, you know, the big picture with regard to NATO. Because, you know, without a doubt, I think that, you know, the NATO alliance is going to expand as a result of the Russian aggression against Ukraine. And Finland and Sweden, I believe, will become in short time full members of the NATO alliance. They are on track to do so. Their governments are, I think, committed to bringing that about. This may happen later this year. I think there will be unanimous support within the NATO alliance for expanding the partnership to bring on board Finland and Sweden. They've become the, you know, the 31st and 32nd members of NATO. Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, has voiced his full support for the you know, for the expansion of the NATO alliance. And so, you know, I do think that, you know, Putin's spectacularly unsuccessful operation in Ukraine. It's all backfiring, I think, for the Russian dictator.
What role do you think the evidence of war crimes has played in Sweden and Finland's obviously heightened interest in joining the NATO alliance?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think it's an important issue. And, you know, especially for a country like Sweden, for example, which prides itself on playing a very active role in terms of advancing, you know, human rights on the world stage. I think the Swedish population, the Finnish population, was absolutely horrified by the tremendous barbarism and savagery that you're seeing being carried out by the Russians inside Ukraine. So that's a factor. But I think the number one factor by a long way, Buck, in terms of the thinking in both countries, is to prevent the Russians from, you know, daring to set foot in either of those countries. And after all, Finland shares a border that's over 800 miles with Russia. And so the Finns, who have been invaded twice by the Russians in the past, they are acutely aware of the tremendous threat level. And a recent opinion poll that came out in Finland showed actually that by a 6-1 margin, Finns were in favor actually of joining NATO. That the numbers are a bit closer in Sweden. But, you know, for the Finns right on the border with Russia, the threat of invasion is a very, very real scenario, and they are on their guard. But as you point out, what we're witnessing right now in Ukraine, the horrific atrocities, the war crimes, this is focusing things well, not only in Finland and Sweden, but all over Europe. I mean, people are absolutely horrified by what's happening. And they, of course, are also worried that, you know, this could happen in their own countries if the Russians decided to invade.
How quickly could Sweden and Finland become full members of NATO if they do apply in the coming weeks? And is there any way that process, I mean, can it be expedited? Are the Russians going to try to bring some kind of pressure to derail it if it starts to happen? I mean, how does the actual process play out?
Yeah, that's a very important question. And I think there's going to be discussion of this at the Madrid NATO summit, which takes place in the last week of June. So that's where I think this will be discussed. Both the Finns and the Swedes have indicated that they would like to, you know, possibly move forward in the course of the next few weeks, so in advance of the Madrid summit. So basically, it would require a unanimous vote from all NATO members to approve this. Every NATO country has to approve an application to join. And I would expect that the whole NATO alliance would support this. So I think it would be a fast-tracked process. And you could see both Finland and Sweden as full members of the NATO alliance, I would say, in the second half of this year. So it can be a very quick process here. I don't expect there's going to be any opposition among other NATO countries to those two nations joining. The Russians will huff and puff, and Putin will make all kinds of threats, but it will make no difference. Russia doesn't have any veto over who joins the NATO alliance. And my expectation is that both Finland and Sweden will be full members of the NATO alliance, certainly before the year is over, if not significantly earlier.
And what practical effect, let's say we get to the point where Finland and Sweden are now part of the alliance, how would you expect that would affect things in Europe? I mean, could there be a U.S. base perhaps even in one of those countries soon? How do you think that would play out?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, both countries, of course, Finland and Sweden, have prided themselves on neutrality for many decades. But I think in the new reality that we have in Europe, with the Russians, 200,000 troops, or they used to have 200,000 troops in Ukraine, that number's fallen significantly because they've taken a lot of casualties. But, everyone's seeing what's happening in Ukraine. And so I wouldn't be surprised if, Finland, for example, approached the United States or Great Britain or another, or other NATO members to establish a full permanent NATO base in Finland. And I think that would be the wise thing to do. The Swedes have been very actively engaged in supporting Ukraine. They've sent over 10,000 missiles to the Ukrainians, actually. And so, even in Sweden, a country that has, been neutral for so long, I think there's a possibility as well of NATO, a NATO base in Sweden also. So anything can happen here. It's a very different landscape in Europe. It would be a wise move, both Finland and Sweden, to welcome, you know, permanent NATO bases in their countries. The Poles have been seeking that for a long time, and I hope that that will be the case for Poland as well. And also, you know, the Finns and the Swedes, I mean, they know how to fight. They have highly effective fighting forces. They will be traditional added value to the NATO alliance. And they also know how to fight, you know, winter warfare.
Thank you, Niall. Biden, just to get your take on this quickly, Biden called the Ukraine invasion a genocide today. Watch this.
Yes, I call this genocide because it's become clearer and clearer that Putin is just trying to wipe out the idea of unity between Ukrainians. And the evidence is mounting. It's a bit different than it was last week. The more evidence is coming out of the literally the horrible thing that the Russians have done in Ukraine. And we're going to only learn more and more about the devastation. And we'll let the lawyers decide internationally whether or not it qualifies. But it sure seems that way to me. Thank you.
So Biden essentially says he's not sure if it under international law qualifies as a genocide, but he used the term genocide. How significant is that?
I mean, I think it's significant. I mean, I think that clearly, I mean, the Russians are, you know, have genocidal intent in Ukraine. They're ethnically cleansing parts of the country. You know, one can quibble over, you know, over the use of the term, you know, genocide, the legal definition. But, you know, I do think that, you know, Putin's regime is a genocidal regime. I mean, that is true. But, you know, with regard to Joe Biden, you know, it's also important that when you make comments like this, that you back up, you know, rhetoric with, you know, with tougher action on every single front against the Russians. You know, don't sit down with the Russians negotiating an Iran nuclear deal while they're carrying out genocide. So, you know, I hope Joe Biden lives up to, you know, the words that he uses and does not partner with a genocidal regime. That's absolute madness. That's what the Biden administration is doing right now. So Joe Biden needs to wake up on the Iran front.
Niall, always appreciate the insight. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much, Bob.
An expansion of NATO wouldn't come without cost. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, recently told lawmakers that new permanent American bases in Europe could be needed in the coming years. But is that such a great idea? We'll answer the question with the host of the President's Daily Brief podcast, Brian Dean Wright, when we come back. First, I want to talk to you about protecting your online data. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed. We know that's not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offers secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data, never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com. And use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more. Hold the line. As we noted in the previous segment, with Russia's brutality on full display in Ukraine, many of America's allies in Eastern Europe are worried they could be next. In a recent congressional hearing, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Mark Milley, told lawmakers the U.S. should consider sending more troops and establishing new bases in Europe to deter Putin from further aggression. Take a look.
My advice would be to create permanent bases, but don't permanently station. So you get the effect of permanence by rotational forces cycling through permanent bases. And what you don't have to do is incur the cost of family moves, PXs, schools, housing, and that sort of thing. So you cycle through expeditionary forces through forward deployed permanent bases. And I believe that a lot of our European allies, especially those such as in the Baltics or Poland or Romania or elsewhere, they are very, very willing to establish permanent bases. They'll build them, they'll pay for them, et cetera.
Sending more of America's sons and daughters to Europe in a military capacity. What do we think about this? Joining me to answer that question is former CIA operations officer and host of the newly launched The President's Daily Brief, the PDB podcast, Brian Dean Wright, Mr. BDW. Brian, great to have you, sir.
Very good day to you.
So, let's start with this one. You're hearing there, Mark Milley. We'll leave aside Mark Milley's fealty to the pronoun-announcing, blue-haired, left-wing, gender warrior crowd in the general American context, right? I mean, he's a guy that seems to pander to the left, specifically on the military situation here as it's projected in Europe. What are your thoughts when you hear him saying, yeah, let's build some permanent bases, additional permanent bases in Europe, and send more U.S. military personnel to staff them?
All right, a couple of things. One, there's already over 100,000 troops in the European continent, so let's just start there. We already have a very big footprint. Second, you'll have to forgive me if I'm a little bit suspicious of people in the Pentagon right now. That guy that we just heard talking about how he needs more, 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 had a lot and then some in Afghanistan 20 years, and he lost that war. So do the people down at the White House right now organizing this new effort in Europe. So I'm a little bit suspicious of the people who say we need to do all these great big things in Europe after they just lost the last big thing. So that's where I start, right? The second piece is, look, it may be that our European friends build the bases, but to your point, we're sending the people. It's our sons and daughters. But we're also hooking ourselves up to a multi-year, billion-dollar each year effort to fund all of this. So it's still going to be expensive. Right? Obviously. And we're hooking ourselves into that for many years, if not decades to come. When you put these bases in, you don't just rip them out the next year. So let's be also very clear about our long-term commitment that we are signing up for, or our elites are signing us up for. But the other piece that I talked about in the podcast, I know you are aware of, this country was founded by a man, or multiple folks, but one in particular, George Washington, who said very clearly, especially on the European issue, look, they have a very a complicated set of internal dynamics. Let's be very careful about setting up permanent alliances. We don't want to do it. Make sure that we base our foreign policy on an issue or a foundation of neutrality. That's what I think that we're forgetting in this conversation. When we're signing up for this stuff, it's to really put our sons and daughters in harm's way. And I don't know that that's the best way that certainly our founders would want us to handle this issue. I don't think so. I don't think you probably share that to some degree as well. We've been burned, certainly the last 20 years. I don't want to be burned again.
Yeah, I remember being in Afghanistan for our former employer 10 years ago thinking, this is not going to work, folks. It's not going to happen. The mission here is never, anyway, and we saw how it ended. It took 10 more years. But here's President Biden, by the way, the Commander-in-Chief, Brian. Isn't that pretty amazing? I know, I still haven't really gotten used to it. Announced that he'll be sending even more aid over to Ukraine in the form of $800 million to help them take the stand, help them take a stand against Russia. Watch this one.
Now I'm once again using my presidential authority to activate an additional security assistance to continue to help Ukraine fend off Russia's assault. An additional $800 million in assistance. That brings the total of new U.S. security assistance to Ukraine to $1 billion just this week. These are direct transfers of equipment from our Department of Defense to the Ukrainian military to help them as they fight against this invasion.
Is this the right move? Should we send more? Should we provide planes? Where do you stand on all that stuff?
Look, I think the interesting thing here is he's celebrating the fact that he's sending billions of dollars to Ukraine. Meanwhile, everybody is like writing checks to all the grocery stores and the gas stations and so forth, paying those big bills. And they're like, hey, can we focus on the disaster that's happening here in the United States right now? So the context, the tone deafness of his announcements, I think are pretty alarming. Most Americans say, hey, we got a problem here. Let's focus our resources on that. But okay, put that aside. The issue of sending equipment to Ukraine, I don't necessarily have a problem with it in that if we are going to send some low-grade equipment that bogs Putin down, I think a reasonable person can say, hey, that's a smart move to at least show not only Putin but the rest of the world that there's a cost when you do this kind of stuff. All right. The piece that concerns me, in fact, there was another little blip on in the news today, hasn't been covered much. The U.S. government is going to give even more tactical intelligence to our Ukrainian partners, which means that our spies and satellites are drawing an X over the Russian soldiers' heads and on their tanks and so forth. That is a much more intense involvement by our government in this war. It's not just equipment. So that's the part that I think that if you're in Moscow, you are thinking about, hey, do we need to hit the United States back? At what point does this no longer become a spy's gentleman's game? You know, this world that former guys like Putin who are, or, you know, KGB spies, they're willing to tolerate some of this shenanigans because they did it against us. But when you start drawing that X on the forehead of a Russian soldier, the calculus starts to change in Moscow. And we have to be thinking about that because they're going to engage in some kind of strike against us, whether it's in places throughout Eastern Europe, whether it's an asymmetric strike of cyber attacks in the United States. That's the part when I hear about all this money and all the equipment, I'm thinking, all right, Ukraine has been invaded. We have to support them. But what does this do in Moscow in terms of its willingness to strike us? That's what we should be talking about and thinking about when we hear this kind of news.
Switching gears here just for a minute or so, Brian, Russia isn't the only hostile foreign government that we have to worry about, of course. China is making its presence felt right here in the U.S. by pumping millions of dollars into American universities and colleges. According to a recent Fox report, China-based entities, including the Chinese government, secured $120 million in contracts with American colleges in 2021, and the Chinese institutions entered into agreements ranging from $105 to $31 million, more than two dozen other universities. China is waging, it seems to me, Brian, with dollars, a kind of economic warfare campaign similar to the ideological and political allies campaign the Soviets did back in the day against the Western world, specifically against us.
Yeah, you were absolutely right. Look, you and I know what these folks, these Chinese communist folks are up to. They are trying to, in fact, they have burrowed themselves in our government, in our press, and in our universities. And they do that for lots of different reasons. But the university piece really is twofold. One, they use it to steal our intellectual property, all the ingenuity and research that's going on at these universities. They do it to target dissidents, Chinese citizens that are here going to school. They find them and they target them, their families, right? They also use these relationships as platforms to then send their spies to pretend that they're, you know, a professor, let's say. Then they go out and they start collecting intelligence with some of their other agents, U.S. agents, right? So they use it as a platform. So there are lots of reasons why this is a bad, bad deal. I think that the alarming piece for me is we have a president who is compromised or may very well be compromised by the Chinese. He's shutting down these investigations into this stuff. That's what's alarming. We know it's happening. And that's really what we should be talking about. Why isn't our president outraged by these relationships? And why isn't he trying to shut it down? And I think we all know why the big guy isn't.
Brian, good to see you, my friend. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Mainstream media can no longer deny the verification of Hunter Biden's laptop. Oh, no. But managing editor at the Chicago Thinker, Avita Duffy, was able to interview some of the journalists who denied the massive story for the past few years. She'll tell us what they had to say. It's quite amusing. That's coming up. Let's talk about the newest sponsor here at Hold the Line, the Silencer Shop. I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment. For many gun owners, using a suppressor is a must. They protect your hearing and they improve your accuracy. Suppressors are 100% legal in 43 states. So if you want to practice safe, accurate shooting, the best way to get your suppressor is through the Silencer Shop. They have a variety of suppressors starting at just $365. My friends at Silencer Shop are the industry leaders for suppressors. They're a Texas-based company that excels at customer service. Their online reviews are amazing. You got to check them out. You can get more details online at Silencer Shop website. That's silencershop.com, silencershop.com, or on Instagram at instagram.com/silencershop. Shop now at silencershop.com. They make silencer ownership simple. Go check it out today. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line. Since the New York Times, the Washington Post ever so courageously, oh yeah, verified Hunter Biden's laptop because it was already verified, but whatever, journalists in the mainstream media can no longer deny its authenticity, at least in public. So what is their excuse for failing to acknowledge the scandal for all this time? Well, one Atlantic writer, Ann Applebaum, also a Russia collusion truther lunatic, says it was because it just wasn't interesting. Check this one out.
My problem with Hunter Biden's laptop is, I think, totally irrelevant. I mean, it's not whether it's disinformation or, I mean, I don't think the Hunter Biden's business relationships have anything to do with who should be president of the United States. So I don't find it to be interesting.
She doesn't find it to be interesting. Oh, okay. Our next guest is a UChicago student who attended that event, you just saw the clip from, says she doesn't buy this elitist narrative coming from the MSM in general, mainstream media. We've got managing editor at the Chicago Thinker, Evita Duffy, who joins me now with Reaction. Evita, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you.
So what was it like at this event where you had a disinformation conference? I know you guys have gotten a lot of conservative media coverage about this. A disinformation conference run by The Atlantic magazine, people like that. You get fake news, Stelter there, a bunch of others. And you and some of your colleagues got to ask some questions about their fake news. How did it go?
Right. So this is a disinformation event that was put on by some of the greatest purveyors of disinformation in America. So the Institute of Politics ran this event with The Atlantic and David Axelrod. He really brought in experts on the subject. And our Chicago Thinker student journalists came to ask them not gotcha questions, but really honest questions about the way that they have botched every major story over the last couple years, and have a major agenda over it. And so they've really proved, how bad they are by not actually, coming clean and apologizing for what they've done, but actually being dismissive of the students who asked them questions. You saw how elitist Ann Applebaum was, and in another clip, Brian Stelter was of one of my other Chicago Thinker colleagues. And then later on, towards the end of the event, the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic actually said that the Chicago Thinker's reporting on this entire event constitutes a disinformation campaign on social media. So it's obvious that disinformation isn't actually disinformation. It's just information they don't like. And they're actually even willing to try and silence a little Chicago student newspaper for embarrassing them publicly.
Here we go. We got some great clips, some highlights, if you will, from the disinformation event, aptly named, but not in the way they thought. Here is Amy Klobuchar refusing to answer a question from you, Ms. Duffy. Let's let the audience enjoy.
You introduced the bill that you talked about today that would punish social media companies like Facebook and Twitter for having health misinformation on their platforms. And I'm going to ask you, if I were to say that there are only two sexes, male and female, would that be considered misinformation that you think should be banned speech on social media platforms?
Okay. I'm not going to get into what misinformation. First of all, I think the bill you're talking about is different than the one we've mostly been talking about. So I want to make that clear. We've been talking about the competition bill, but there is another bill that I have on vaccine misinformation. It is that specific in a public health crisis.
Okay, but I feel like there wasn't an answer to your question. Was there an answer to your question? Did it come later?
Answer. And you should, it's your bill. You should know what kind of misinformation is going to be considered misinformation in your own bill. So it was a complete non-answer.
Here is Brian Stelter, who sometimes I think just exists so that conservative media has the ultimate left-wing media journo guy to just hold up and let everyone see this is who they say is calling balls and strikes on journalism ethics. Here he is responding when he was asked about his network's ethics and the history of its misinformation. Let's look at this one.
My honest answer to you, and I'll come over and talk in more detail after this, is that I think you're describing a different channel than the one that I watch. But I understand that that is a popular right-wing narrative about CNN. I think it's important when we talk about shared reality and democracy, all these networks, all these news outlets have to defend democracy. And when they screw up, admit it. But when Benjamin Hall, the Fox correspondent, was wounded in Ukraine, the news crews at CNN and the New York Times stopped what they were doing and they tried to help. They tried to help him get out of the country. They tried to find the dead crew members. That's what news outlets do. That's how they actually do work together, to your question about sharing those kinds of connections and trust.
Yeah, watching a different channel. I don't know what channel he thinks he works for, but it's not CNN, apparently, if that's what he thinks.
No, of course not. And I mean, this is so embarrassing for the mainstream media. This entire event has been just an utter and complete embarrassment. And the fact that they're trying to, Ann Applebaum, who was from that first clip, has actually blocked the Chicago Thinker on Twitter. And then Jonah Goldberg doubled down and defended her, essentially, saying that, that Daniel Schmidt's question to her, to Ann Applebaum, was trollish. I mean, these people are losing their minds over us posting clips of their full answers. This is not disinformation. This is just straight up journalism that they're now trying to smear.
Oh, yes, they are. I mean, here's the Atlantic editor-in-chief. This guy is a real windbag, who calls the Chicago Thinker, where you write, and they're reporting on the disinformation events, right? It was a disinformation seminar of sorts or symposium or whatever. They say that you guys were doing a disinformation campaign. Watch.
I think one darkly humorous but inevitable measurement of our success is that our disinformation conference has been the subject of disinformation campaigns on social media already. So, yeah, congratulate yourselves for that. We'll study that at next year's disinformation.
What was the disinformation exactly? I'm just wondering. I mean, that's the title of the conference. It's like they don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's what I've been saying. It's not disinformation. It's just information they don't like and information that's been embarrassing for them. And I think it's important to talk about what they want to do with the disinformation that they're so concerned about. They want to give government algorithmic control over social media platforms to stop the spread of whatever they deem misinformation. And who's going to decide what's true and what's not? And the answer is they are. They want to have the gatekeeping power that they lost when social media democratized information and independent journalists became a thing. And if you watched Tucker last night, you saw that in Canada, they're actually having the government pre-approve journalists and decide who has the ability to spread their information online and who doesn't. And I don't know. I mean, this conference is kind of telling me that it might be coming here soon. And so disinformation right now, it should be the scariest word in the dictionary. Anybody that hears that word, you know that they're not talking about trying to find the truth. They're trying to stop. They're talking about trying to shut down people they don't like.
Good to see you, Avita, and good work. Appreciate you. A preschool teacher claims she makes her students choose new pronoun pins every day to teach about diversity. They say they aren't indoctrinating your kids, folks. We'll have that video for you in Quick Hits. Stay with us. America's Treasury Secretary goes full-blown climate alarmist, and a job listing shows just how out of touch the Washington Post is with average Americans. We've got those stories coming up in Quick Hits. Let's get right to it. Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, she knows the Fed stuff well, right? So she's been a long-standing person involved in monetary policy and the government and all the rest of this stuff, right? She's somebody who you think knows about this stuff. And here's the thing. She's also a liberal zealot in her own way. You have to remember this. So even some of the people who are knowledgeable about economics at some level, knowledgeable about Fed policy, monetary policy, inflation, obviously hasn't done a great job stopping that from happening. But you see what their politics are on other issues. You understand, oh, even in areas where they have expertise at some level, they're being influenced by their left-wing agenda. Here is the Treasury Secretary worried that the window is closing to decarbonize our economies. Watch.
The recent IPCC reports confirm that our window of opportunity to leave our planet worthy of our children and our grandchildren is even closer to being permanently shut. We must redouble our efforts to decarbonize our economies, recognizing that countries will use a range of tools, including carbon pricing, regulation, and subsidies, to achieve needed emission reductions.
Green socialism, that's what she's really talking about. Green socialism, that's what she wants. Carbon pricing, you're going to pay extra money because you're living life in a modern economy and having to, I mean, friends, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. But this is how crazy the left is. Even the Treasury Secretary buys into this Green New Deal lunacy. Washington Post tweeted out quite a job listing for a reporter to cover this foreign country far, far away that the libs don't understand called Texas. Job posting. The Washington Post is looking for an enterprising reporter based in Texas to document life in red state America and develop a new beat mapping the culture, public policies, and politics in a region shaped by conservative ideology. You know, it's almost like they're going out there to, you know, study study a pod of dolphins in the wild. It's like, red state Texans. This is amazing. Look, I actually think it's good that the journos might try to learn what it's like for people who live in the rest of the country to live their lives in places that are red. And I think it's funny. It's just though an admission of the fact that they just have no idea. I mean, they do live in this alternate universe. A lot of soy lattes being consumed. Preschool teacher here says she makes her four-year-olds pick a different pronoun pen, not once in a while, every day.
Hi, my name's Az and I'm a preschool teacher. So my classroom celebrates diversity. It's probably my favorite thing to teach. We usually use kids' books to talk about this kind of thing. Recently we started wearing pronoun pins and the kids get to pick a new pronoun pin every day. We have some that pick like she, her every single day and we have some that change it up. So diversity is really important in my class. So I recently realized that there's a whole lot of really amazing figureheads and people to look up to in this world who aren't white or straight or male or have what have you, and that we should learn a little bit more about these people.
They are trying to indoctrinate your kids, obviously. Obviously. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has supported our nation's heroes and their families ever since. Heroes like Marine Corps Sergeant Adam Mayo. He served our nation for over 7 years before he was severely injured during training. He was left paralyzed from the chest down, severely limiting his ability to move around his home independently. Tunnel to Towers paid Sergeant Mayo's mortgage, removing a financial burden for him and his family. The foundation gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his specific needs. Tunnel to Towers helps severely injured service members and first responders, as well as Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders. It has already come to the aid of so many heroes and their families by providing mortgage-free homes. The foundation is also committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's t2t.org.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.